Welcome to episode 9 of WP Dev Table. Today we're talking about varying vagrants and WordPress in universities with Jeremy Felt. If you haven't seen the show before, basically WP Dev Table is a roundtable discussion with WordPress developers about the tools they use, the software they use, best practice, and things like that. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, you can follow us on Twitter, you can follow us on Facebook, or you can go to wpdevtable.com/subscribe and even sign up to the mailing list if that's your preferred thing. So with me is my usual co-host, Jason Resnick. I'll get Jason to introduce himself.
Sure. Hi, Bronson. I provide monthly development resources for design and marketing businesses, basically help designers and marketers and agencies use WordPress to develop awesome, secure, and flexible websites. I'd also like to extend my congrats to Bronson and the rest of the guys over there on being merged, I guess, with HumanMate. Definitely.
Thanks, Jason. Thank you very much. We're very excited about that. So, yeah, my name's Bronson, and yeah, I'm now part of HumanMate. We do WordPress development for agencies and corporates around the globe. We specialize in... I'm trying to think of good wording. I'm used to doing my own spiel. We did development and consulting work for large-scale sites and big-name clients around the world. And joining us on the show is Jeremy Felt. We're very lucky to have Jeremy on the show. We've got some great questions lined up for in this interview. But first off, I'll let Jeremy introduce himself. So, Jeremy, over to you.
Well, I'm no good at introductions, but I'm a WordPress developer with Washington State University. Out in Pullman, Washington, on the opposite side of the state from Seattle. I've been with WSU about a year and a half or so, and we're building out a nice big open source platform using WordPress multi-site to provide websites for all the different colleges and departments in the university that choose to use it. BBB is my other kind of side project besides WordPress. I maintain that with the help of a nice community. And then recently I was added as a WordPress guest committer, which I'm really grateful for. That's been fun for the last release.
That's awesome. Cool. So I guess our first topic is BBB and all things revolving around that. So you were one of the early leaders when it came to using Vagrant and WordPress hand in hand. So what got you started on Vagrant?
So the specific moment was we were working with a client and I was troubleshooting an Nginx proxy issue and I was using MAMP in my local environment. So I was pushing code changes to production in order to test if things were working, which just irritated the crap out of me. So that turned into trying to discover the nicest way to put Nginx on my OS X machine, which led down several different paths that made no sense and that were going to basically lead to just polluting my machine with server software. So finally, Vagrant clicked pretty quickly. I think if you look at the first commit for VVV, there's probably even the client name in there where it was me trying to figure out the Nginx rules so that this would actually work. But yeah, it became obvious pretty quick that this is the way I wanted to do development, and that I no longer wanted to work in Apache. No offense to Apache, but Nginx has been great, and then it led to having a nice controlled environment that pretty much matches the environments I was working in. So
excellent. Yeah, so in terms of varying vagrants, did you start that yourself, or was that an internal thing at your time at 10UP, or like how did it kind of get started? Obviously, we know that was that client issue that you were troubleshooting, but how did it kind of turn into what it is today?
It was definitely a hand-in-hand process. So it was something where I was struggling all day to figure this out, and then went to the WordPress meetup in Portland that night, talked to a few people, and then came home, and then that's when things started clicking, and so it's, you know, the lines get blurred pretty quickly, but there was an immediate use, I think, or an excitement about using that within 10UP, so I think we were all excited about getting it built up quickly. a lot of the early contributions came from everybody on the team. So.
Nice. So what were, I guess, the main goals of VVV as the project?
Well, I guess the primary goal the whole time has been, it's almost more as a communication to the community than anything else, as a way to encourage people to use a development environment that matches their production environment. And this was kind of the environment that we used at 10UP for the most part, the combination of PHP, FPM, Nginx, and Memcached, and then kind of the goals that we wanted to use in production. So originally I had this idea where everybody would fork it and change the shell scripts and do whatever they want, and there would be Apache, and there would be whatever other server software you wanted to put on there. But I think it got more exciting to use just VVV itself, so then we kind of honed in on a few things that everybody needed, and we've kept it pretty stable with the basic server configuration since. And I think the goals then kind of transferred to something where it's more of a general setup and then can be used to get started really quickly with developing things in WordPress.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you guys got a ton of contributors already. I mean, I guess, what's the feature battle like? How do you know what goes into it or what might be a nice to have, but it really doesn't fit in line with what you guys are trying to do with it?
Right. I don't know. It's tough. We haven't run into too many features where somebody wanted them and not many others didn't. So I think the one goal remains just keeping a nice, stable environment for people to work in. So you don't want to change any of the big things like Nginx or PHP. And then the hard decisions are when somebody wants to add in like a new look to the dashboard where, it's how do you make that decision as a community to start implementing bigger features like that or provide the way for somebody to customize it and extend it. So I think if you look at the GitHub page, we have a lot of forks of the project, and I think that kind of shows that people are taking it and then going to kind of create something on their own that's just slightly different. But then there's been some great extensions too, like Allison Barrett and Brad Parbs and JTrip. All have the various scripts that work with VVV to provide enhancements. I think the most exciting recently is Brad Parbs VV, which gives you a command at the command prompt to kind of create these different configurations on the fly.
I've been using that pretty heavily lately.
Yeah.
Very, very good use. Yeah.
Very useful, yeah. And that was one of the, it takes advantage of one of the big features that was probably the most fun about the VVV community when we implemented the auto site setup scripting. We had Simon Wheatley working on that and Weston Ritter working on that. And just there was, I think, the pull request of the pull request of the pull request that finally all came together and made it so that you could spin up these additional sites. And so that was a big improvement that led to some of this.
That's awesome. Now, in terms of provisioning for VVV, I think you use shell scripts from memory. Well, what made you choose shell scripts rather than, say, Salt, Puppet, Chef, or things like that?
At the time, it was because my brain was only wrapping around one new thing at once. So I was like learning Vagrant, and I was like, okay, well, it's like at first I went off and I started exploring Chef and I started exploring Puppet, and then things got muddy really quickly, and I was like, well, you know what? Like, I know shell scripting. I use it every day on my servers, so I'm just going to figure this out first, and then maybe later we'll choose something. Of course, once you get people using it, then it's kind of hard to say, let's stop everything and use this instead. I think if you go through the old issues, there's a point where we played around with Puppet at one point. Mm-hmm. I think Daniel Bachhuber did a bunch of work and actually transferring all of our provisioning over to a Puppet configuration. But then at some point it was like, no, like that, this is the, I think at that point one of the major goals of the project was to make it accessible to the community too. So you could look at that provisioning script and see it's installing this, and not have to dive into all these different folders of different modules. And Puppet.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Puppet never entirely clicked with me, so it was tough. But
yeah, cool.
I think if we did it all over again, though, Salt is one that I've fallen in love with personally, and that's what we use at WSU, and that's what I use for a couple of my personal sites.
Cool. That's what we use at Human Made as well. We use Salt.
With
Salty WordPress.
Salty WordPress, that's right, which is a great. But that configuration ends up being so straightforward. You're just editing different YAML files, and it goes. A lot more benefits to that approach than using shell. But I do still like that VBV is approachable by anybody that can read a shell script.
Yeah, it's good for that. That's for sure. And it's heavily documented too, which is great for new users.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of deployments, what got Jason and I talking about you is your series of blog posts on deployments. So in terms of deployments in VVV, how do you deploy things to your live environments and production staging environments?
Not with VVV.
Okay.
that's tough. And I covered all the different deployment methods I use.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, most of them are just kind of crappy piecemeal. Put it together, and if it works, then keep using it. Which I honestly think that's how most of us do deployment anyway. It's just a series of things that kind of pipe together, and if it's working, then you just don't touch it. I'd obviously like to get better at some of that stuff, but I think sharing the work is the first step in the process and getting feedback from everybody. But with VVV, I imagine people are using it with FTP, with various GitHub deployments, and there's still that layer where VVV provides the server environment where you can run all of your code in, but then you still have your environment on whatever machine you're using to do all of your other tasks. So that's where you could have Capistrano installed and managing deployments there.
Yeah, I know Brad is got Vagrant Push in there. He's using that for the deployments.
Oh, is he? I hadn't seen
that. Yeah, I haven't really messed around with it just yet because I'm mid a couple of projects, so I haven't dove too deep, but it's definitely interesting and I want to see how that all works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vagrant Push is really easy to set up and it's actually quite powerful. I've been pretty impressed with it. As soon as I saw that feature drop in Vagrant, I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna have a play around. I'm like, wow. I just keep solving all the problems in my development workflow.
And what does it work with now? Is it AWS?
Yep, it works with and SFTP. So it's pretty cool.
Huh.
It's quite powerful.
Might have to play around with that.
So who would you, I guess, encourage to try VVV? I mean, we've probably all been down the various development local environments setups with like MAMP and XAMPP and all those other ones, but I mean, is VVV like another layer on top of that, would you say, or you think it's as easy to pick up?
That's tough because it can be difficult only because, well, MAMP, so if you install something like MAMP or WAMP, it's a one-off. You double click it, you install it, and then things are kind of just working magically in the background, and you know. Well, especially if you get something like MAMP Pro, there's a few configuration settings you can change, and things are super easy. I think that kind of disconnects you from the process of development a little bit, so you aren't completely familiar with the stack that you're building for, which I think is completely fine for many people. If you're installing WordPress and you're developing a few things for WordPress, but to start, especially building things that scale. Where you're dealing with production environments that are under a heavy load and you really want to make sure you're troubleshooting all the different caching issues or server issues, then I think something like VVV or even something better than VVV starts making a lot more sense.
Mm.
But at the same time, especially if you have a Mac, to be honest, the process of installing VirtualBox, Vagrant, and then VVV just kind of just works now. Windows can throw in a few other quirks where it's kind of hard to communicate with it, but I think there's quite a few people have solved those issues. So if you're willing to do a little bit of digging around, then it it provides a nice environment for.
I was actually having a conversation on Twitter earlier today about VirtualBox versus VMware. Would you have a preference? Do you have a preference?
Well, so far, I've only used VirtualBox for day-to-day development. Everything's worked out pretty well. I saw a headline the other day, I didn't actually read into it, where development's kind of halted on the VirtualBox project, so I'm a little worried about that. I'm not sure. I know others have had success with VMware. Others have had kind of trouble with VMware. I think they all present their different virtualization issues where there's some part that they don't do a perfect job of communicating with your host machine. But whichever, I mean, all of them technically work. And then Parallels I tried out the other day, thanks to Tobias sent a pull request in to add Parallels support to VVV. That kind of just worked magically and even seemed a lot faster than VirtualBox. So I think as Vagrant gets more mature, it'll start working better with other virtualization platforms. And, I think whichever one just works for your machine. If you're already using one for your other development workflows, whether it be testing out another VM, one of the Windows VMs, then whatever system you use for that, you might as well try using that with Vagrant as well.
Who's testing Windows?
What's that? Every once in a while.
And in terms of the site wizards and extensions for VVV that exist, we've discussed a few of them. Are there any kind of wizards or things that you'd like someone to build on top of VVV to solve a common problem?
Well, we talked about another one I think I'll attribute to JJJ. He brought up an issue about how VVV, while we want it to be a replacement for MAMP and we want to kind of mention it in the same sentence, it's not an exact replacement for it because it doesn't have that nice GUI. So if somebody ever figures out a way to build a really nice GUI to talk with something like VVV, that would be great. I know there are a couple tools out there. Mm-hmm. I think it's like Vagrant Manager or something. We'll add that kind of interface. I actually haven't played with it personally, so I'm not sure how well of a job it does, but I think that would be a good step to extend something with a nice interface, especially once we get to the point where we have a better config added to VVV, and then there may be a GUI where you can, you know, toggle a few things on or off or choose which sites to enable or disable, and that could go a long way. I mean.
Cool. That's cool. So next on our list, we've got the Washington State University WordPress kind of platform. Can you tell us a little bit about that project and what goals you're trying to solve there and how it all got started?
Well, this... So it all got... Well, when I got hired to WSU, the objective I think the central communications team at WSU had decided... We're going to offer a central CMS, something that they already did, but offer a new central CMS to the university. It's going to be opt-in so that anybody can use it. It's going to be free so that if you choose to use it for basic things, we aren't going to charge your department budget, blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be built on WordPress. So they went out and hunted around and found me through Zach Tolman. And then, so at that point, it was a kind of a decision. It's like, well, you build out just WordPress, and for every college, give them their own WordPress install, or do you try to do it all like in a WordPress.com model where there's just one installation of WordPress? That really excited me, so we went that way. and it's been a good decision so far. And then part of that, I think, it was like, okay, now that we're going to do this, we should, well, multi-site can be a bear to work with. So let's just open source what we're doing so that if we can convince them, other universities wouldn't be afraid to kind of offer the same thing. I think one of the long-term goals is to try to figure out a way to get some kind of consortium together with several big schools and say, you know, this is a common objective that we all have is to provide this central CMS. And so we'd like to do it together and then work to maintain it and build out the features. So we made quite a bit of progress in the first year. And we have 500-something sites on there right now. So overall, it's not like a huge installation of WordPress. I mean, people are running sites that have, you know, thousands and thousands of sites on there. But often the stories I hear are one multi-site network with thousands and thousands of sites on there. We're doing it in a model where we have 40 different networks right now. So a college may have several if the chemistry department wants to also have their own network of sites. So I think the way that we're managing content is a little bit different, but it allows for both to happen. And I think over time, building in features that deal with things like Active Directory users and managing SSL certificates and all of the kind of day-to-day server management stuff that has to happen, making that a kind of a more automated part so it's easy for everybody.
In terms of actually open sourcing this, was it hard to get the uni to understand why you would want to open source this? Was there much red tape there, or were they pretty open to it?
Everybody was pretty open to it, I think. This is another one of those cases where you just do it until somebody says you can't do it, and nobody ever said we couldn't do it. And I think one of our primary objectives with all of the work that we were doing from even before I got here was we want to be completely open with what we're doing. And so the natural extension is then we should show our work as we do it, and then we should make everything open source. It helps because WSU is a public land-grant university, which means that one of our primary objectives behind teaching and research is the service aspect, where it's one of our objectives to go out to the rest of the community, specifically in Washington State, but just to the community as a whole, and share the work that we've done. So that's very much an academic objective, but I think it should spread to all different parts of the university, and I think that includes the stuff that we do with communication. So it's easy to make that argument, too, when you're talking to people around the university, because open sourcing things like this directly fulfills the objectives of the university.
So when you wrote that series of posts, I guess, about your workflow, mm-hmm. The first post was completely about WSU. How long did you come up with that? Like, how long?
It's an evolving process. There was probably a one-month period where I really had to think about it quite a bit in order to get things down. It probably went through several iterations where it was me posting, publishing code is one thing. I can have whatever crazy deployment system I want that has any kind of requirements. So I probably had something set up where there were post-commit hooks on my machine that were going out to the server. But the second you want to introduce other developers, and then especially other developers that may not be as geeky about all of the different pipings between the server that you are, then you have to try to reduce requirements so that it'll work on Windows, so that it'll work on OS X. And that's what kind of led to the deployment via GitHub kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. So what do you think is the, the current state of WordPress, for lack of a better term, in universities? Do you think that WSU can champion WordPress, just like what Boone did with CUNY schools?
I think we can definitely help. I think, Boone's done a lot for your universities and schools using WordPress. So I think we can hope to achieve that. And I think we do a pretty good job everywhere we go. The WSU's been really supportive of going out to WordCamps, sponsoring WordCamps. So spreading that message wherever we are, and then trying to run into people at Iowa State or Penn State or wherever, and just talking to other land-grant universities and just to other big schools in general, to help figure out how we can all kind of push things forward.
How big is your team over there?
Our web team is somewhere around 20 people, I think. We have
decent size.
Three specific developers, three people who would No, four people who would list developer probably in their job title. I'm the only WordPress developer, so we have a few designers and developers that can dive in and poke around when needed.
And how do you manage new features and plugin requests and things like that from each faculty? Do you have a kind of workflow internally that you use?
We're starting to run into that more and more. That's one of the great things. When you build out the system originally, and there's three people using it, then everything's easy because you all have the same requirements and nobody wants any plugins. But now that we're at 500 sites and there's 1,000 different people that are bringing in different bug reports or feature requests, then it starts to get hard. But one of the things is, like, we're offering this free central service, and it's opt-in to be here. And we say up front, like, we'll do whatever we can to add new features, but the two primary objectives are security and performance. So we're not going to introduce any code to the system that can break down the security wall. And then because we're all on the shared platform, all of the code needs to be at least somewhat performant so that we can feel comfortable that, 500 sites decide to enable this plugin, what happens? So we haven't gotten to it too many times, but there's a code review process where if you do want to install a plugin from the plugin directory, then we'll vet it to make sure that it's secure, it's performant, and ideally there's some kind of development workflow in place where either the developer's publicly accessible or we can go through GitHub and submit pull requests easily to get things done that way.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So in your series of posts, you also mentioned that you have some WSU indie sites, as you call them. Mm-hmm. How do they differ from your actual other sites? Are they standalone installs of WordPress, or are they still on your multi-site network and they're just configured differently? Or how tell us a little bit about how they differ.
So those are technically that server is kind of for the rule breakers. So the sites where we need to do something really crazy that maybe uses a plugin that sets up custom tables, and I don't have time to go through a full code review, but it's like, no, we have to ship this now. And it's like, okay, we're going to put it over here, and if that crashes something, then that's kind of expected.
Go play in the sandbox over there.
Yeah, it's kind of a sandbox. And then originally, before we launched the platform, there were a few sites where we had to move them off of our other server, which is an IIS server, and get them up quickly because of various things. So originally, the sites that are on there could be a single site install. They could be a multi-site install. We don't have any multi-network stuff going on there. But with the goal being that one day they would be able to join the rest of the platform. But acknowledging that every once in a while there's a project that you're going to work on that just does some crazy stuff that doesn't really fit the mold, and that's okay.
Cool. So our next topic is maintenance updates and rollbacks. So how do you actually manage maintenance of these sites internally for, say, core and plugin updates? Do you have a staging environment as well that you test on, or what's your process there?
So we don't have a staging environment, actually, which is interesting. But we do have a salt provisioned local environment. So the same scripts that we use to provision the production environment. So everything that I'd say a large majority of the stuff gets tested by me before it hits production. Every once in a while, when we have a few different projects going on, we'll have a couple people working on themes, and that stuff's kind of post first, ask questions later. So as long as I know they aren't touching kind of deep internals at all, then it's okay. If we're just doing some JavaScript and some CSS, then I can review the commits later and make sure that we're good. I'd say staging is local for the most part.
Okay.
But every piece of code that goes up is under version control, so we keep WordPress core under version control, all of our extensions under version control, and then the various plugins we're using and all of that.
Yeah, cool. It seems like in your posts you use rsync quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, have you worked with Capistrano or any other tools for that? And why did you link on, I guess, rsync?
Because I think, honestly, because I came up with an rsync command that works for everything I do. So I was like, ah, okay, this works. Really, I think Capistrano is one of those holes in my development process that I'd really like to figure out at some point, because I think the rollback system that it offers and just the general deployment flow makes a ton of sense. The reasons I haven't, I think the primary reason I haven't spent a lot of time exploring that for use amongst our team is because of the Ruby dependency and knowing that I'd have to find a way to make it familiar for everybody that doesn't necessarily want to be familiar with it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've used Capistrano for a number of years, going back to when I did Rails development, but it definitely works great for WordPress as well. But like you said, to do the dependency, when it's not a Mac, when you're not working on Mac or something like that, then, you know, Windows machines are a pain in the neck with that kind of thing. So
yeah.
So I've got a next topic is WordPress in universities. What things do you think we could do as a community to try and help champion WordPress in universities?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, it's not. There's parts of that are tough. I think. Well, so the biggest obvious hurdle when you start doing something for a university is how much posts don't matter, and pages do.
Yep.
And then that can quickly lead to a lot of different issues depending on the site. So thankfully, there's Boston University has BU Navigation. I think they have a couple other plugins I haven't used, BU Sections and BU something else. But it provides an entirely new interface for managing the nav menu structure for sites that have thousands of pages, because of the WordPress, when you're using the default interface for nav menus, once you get to a certain point, you hit the max input vars in PHP, and you can't actually save the menus, and things start disappearing, and people start freaking out, which is okay. I mean, interfaces like that need to be created for certain scenarios.
Mm.
But I think the page itself, in some ways that are hard to describe, isn't a kind of a first-class citizen in the way things work. But I think it'd be cool if we could help universities come up with ways to better manage pages and kind of, you know, the hierarchy, everything that goes along with it. And then things, I think the second thing would be something around the media library and how documents are a part of that.
Yeah.
Not everything's an image or a video, but there are PDFs and doc files and pages files and spreadsheets, and it's pretty much the only thing everybody wants to upload. So we've been taking advantage of Ben Balter's WP document revisions lately, which has gone over really well. So it'd be fun to, I don't know if that's something that belongs in core, but giving attention to things like that, I think somebody could come up with some pretty cool stuff. Pretty popular plugins if they were to, you know, focus on those.
Yeah, I agree. I think that WP document revisions plugin kind of almost starts turning WordPress into an intranet solution, which is cool, because I think that's the space that's been lacking in the WordPress space. And I think that could really change the way that people use WordPress internally in faculties and universities and even corporates. What kind of WordPress projects have you seen other universities tackle, and what have you seen that's got you excited?
Well, so I think, personally, I get most excited when I see, I'm starting to realize this more and more, I honestly don't care as much about launching a static, you know, web page for a college. So it's like, it's really cool when we get a college launched and they have, you know, 100 pages, and that's fun, but I want to find more ways to convince people to share their work on a daily basis and use posts. Not that they shouldn't use pages, but I think it's really cool when when the CMS, whatever CMS you're using, is used as a platform to communicate to others. And it goes back to the service objective of the land-grant university. But I think the stat I'm going to pay attention to closest for our team in 2015 is the number of posts being created per user in our ecosystem.
Oh, yeah.
Because if we can get researchers talking about what they're doing and students talking about what they're doing, then it makes it easier to even use that to generate content on other pages, because you can kind of harness those different stories.
Yeah. And do you push stats back to the people that are publishing to kind of encourage them to post more and go, hey, you posted this and you've got X amount of views?
Not yet, but it would be fun to start surfacing some of that. So we do quite a bit with analytics, and we have kind of this cool tiered system where you can see, you know, global and platform and site specific. So it'd be fun to start surfacing some of that more.
Very cool.
I should mention, so the two things, I think the two existing sites, two existing university WordPress sites that excite me the most are sites.psu.edu. So Penn State, I think it's, I feel like they have something like 10,000 sites on there. But you can, as a employee or a student of Penn State, you can go there and just create a site, select from a bunch of themes, and that's kind of exactly what I would like to happen somewhere in our ecosystem, is a place where I can hit an explore button and I can see what people have been talking about all day when I go home and start looking for things to tweet out. And then I think VCU Rampages. Rampages.us. So it's another case where they have a lot of different WordPress sites, I think thousands and thousands, all in one system. So those are the things where it's really cool to have colleges launch on WordPress, but then it's really, really cool to have lots of people at the university talking about what they're doing.
Yeah, awesome. We'll put some links in the show notes to those sites too, so people can check them out.
Cool.
Do you think that WordPress should be taught as a part of the curriculum at all in the universities? Or, I mean, I guess also, how do these people just kind of pick up WordPress and then they just say, okay, I'm just in there as in the GUI, or are they doing development in there, or, you know, how is all that working?
Right. So I think there's probably a place somewhere. I don't know about a curriculum for WordPress, though I think it'd be really cool to see it, but at least a general web curriculum where, I mean, when you're an incoming student, you probably learn how to use the library, or, you know, you learn about a few of the resources that are available to you. It'd be cool if at the same time the university could say, and we provide everybody this, you know, WordPress site or Drupal site or whatever, and this is how you use that and update it throughout your academic career. Right now, the way we handle training is if a group joins the platform, we have a few people that'll sit down with them and go through things for like an hour or two. And luckily, WordPress, since it's used by, you know, one out of every five sites, one out of every four, then a lot of people are already familiar with it. So you can say, you know, this is WordPress, and then their eyes light up and say, oh, cool, I already know how to do this. And then one of the other great initiatives we've had is we do these open labs on Friday mornings where we invite the whole community to come stop by and then just ask whatever questions there are. So we'll either answer questions for 2 hours or we'll walk through the different interfaces that we've built to try to get everybody familiar with them, and that can go a long way in kind of spreading things. I do think there's probably many better things we can do to kind of instruct people how to use it, because it can still be a kind of a jarring thing for somebody that's never had a website to all of a sudden have this thing in front of them, and then you're telling them that they can update the content whenever they want, but do they really want to do that?
You ever think of using, like, I know, like, Tridine has that video user manuals. You ever think maybe doing something like that where it's custom to exactly the platform that you guys are, you know, you've built?
Like video manuals, or
yeah.
So we have one guy on our team, and then somebody in another one of our colleges working right now on some specific training video or training videos that are specific to either workflows in the university or to our interfaces. Like one of the big things that we got really lucky with is Theme Foundry made the open source Make theme, which is it's a great theme, has an amazing page builder as part of the interface. So thanks to open source and thanks to the Theme Foundry, we were able to integrate that into our default theme so that page builder interface is available, but then still uses our brand framework on the front end. So one of the objectives is to create videos that show how to use those kinds of things and then post them up as 30-second or 2-minute clips like at web.wsu.edu, and then so you can go through and start learning those things. But I think video definitely helps a lot, especially if it's kind of consumable video, that short and to the point.
In terms of your core plugins and things that you run on the platform, what are some essential must-use ones that you use? Like, do you have things like Editflow? Do you have some kind of single sign-on solution? I think you mentioned Active Directory.
Yeah.
Is that used as how the students and staff log in automatically?
Yep. So that's the Active Directory stuff is actually the one of the few repositories we have private, only because I'm pretty confident it would be okay to open source it, but then it's very WSU specific because it uses our AD controller and everything.
Yeah.
And I live in constant fear that I've forgotten some kind of security check somewhere. So one day we'll open source it, but not today. But yeah, I think it was a compilation of something that existed before I got here. I think at this point, we have a very straightforward AD system, so we're just using LDAP to bind and then go. The must-haves for people using the platform right now are Gravity Forms and TableFS. I'm not sure that there's a... So we don't usually enable any plugins by default. We let everybody choose what they want to run, but those two, as soon as somebody runs into them, it's an immediate activation. And they're really powerful. It's definitely hard to argue with any of that.
Yeah. And in terms of user roles, do you have a lot of custom roles that you've got for all your different WordPress users and such?
Not yet, actually. It's one of the things I thought I would end up focusing a lot of time on, but we haven't been able to really get there yet. So originally we created the role of global admin, so somebody that is like the super admin.
Oh, yeah.
It's the super admin. That's now a global admin. And then we created the role of network admin, so you can do things like add sites and add users to your network without having access to the entire multi-network system. So that's the one custom role we've created. We've made a few modifications to capabilities so that editors can do a couple different things.
Yep.
But I think the big role-based thing that we'll get to in the near future is directly tied to Active Directory. So being able to say, this Active Directory group has access to edit this page, or this Active Directory group has this access to add users to this site, or something along those lines. So it'll be interesting to see what we end up doing with just doing capabilities checks, or if we actually start to create these really defined roles. But I think at some point it'll become more necessary.
Yep.
Especially because it can get really confusing to go from editor to admin. All of a sudden you have a lot more things in front of you on the screen that don't necessarily make a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's interesting that you're mentioning like a kind of global admin, because I kind of do feel that when you're using WordPress multi-site, you kind of, there's almost like there's a missing role there. I think it'd be interesting to kind of discuss that with the core team to see if they believe that there's something like that. There could even be a track ticket about that. I don't know. You probably know, Jeremy, because I know you're heavily involved in the multi-site tickets in core.
Yeah, I think it'll... I don't think it exists yet, but I think it's very possible it'll come up as we get closer and closer to having a more built-in support for multi-networks.
Yeah. I guess that brings me to another question. In terms of WordPress multi-site, what are some features or things that you think are lacking in core at the moment that you'd like to see developed over the next couple of years?
Well, we have weekly office hours in the core multi-site channel in Slack. The two kind of features that I'd like to have built in are, there's the network privacy plugin, there's also restricted site access. Both of those provide that kind of layer where you can say a site is private or only accessible to subscribers so some kind of interface that lets you do that. That ends up being a pretty big requirement here where either, we have a site that we're going to be launching, but we want to keep it hidden, or it's a P2 that needs to be behind lock and key for anybody that's not a member. So it's nice to have something like that in place. I think it would be nice for everybody to have. And then the huge one, I think, would be to enable plugins the same way that we can enable themes on different sites. And I think William Earnhardt's working on that. He has a plugin in progress that has some stuff. So.
Oh, awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I guess one other question that I didn't even think to ask until now, what's your infrastructure like there internally? How many servers do you have access to? And do you have a big server farm? Or what's your kind of stack?
We have one 16 gig 4 CPU 150 gig hard drive server right now.
All right. And how much load does it end up under?
Let's see. Not much, actually. It's pretty surprising. Although the other day we had an accidental self-inflicted DDoS.
Oops.
But yeah, so I have four CPUs that are all kind of just hanging out doing their thing right now. Nothing's under stress, and the platform itself only averages, I think last month was 400,000 page views. So we're ramping up pretty good on traffic, and I think in March we're planning on launching the central wsu.edu site.
Cool.
So that'll be big because it'll kind of just double our traffic on that day. So we have another server being brought up so we can start to play around with some redundancy. But.
Cool. And how many registered users do you have on your multi-site there?
One. I think we might have broke the 1,000 user points.
Yep.
Cool. Yes, 1,001.
Oh, awesome. So, cool.
Which isn't... we have somewhere around 20,000 students, I think, and then another... 10 or 15,000 employees? So it'd be nice for that number to be a lot higher next year.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I'm sure the more they use it internally, people will start talking to each other about how they're using it, and then, you'll get more and more users. I reckon it'll snowball pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, the snowball incident we're waiting to happen for, we're waiting for to happen, is we have a labs program where we give a free site to anybody with a research lab. So it's labs.wsu.edu/whatever you want. So, so ideally, you start sharing the work that you're doing and talking about different funding requests you got. So the snowball moment is when somebody writes a story for their lab site, shares it somewhere, somebody finds it, and then gets a bunch of funding because of that. Then I think everybody in the university will all of a sudden want one of those lab sites. So. We've done a good job of championing it internally, so I think it's going to keep on rolling. But it'll be cool if we can get some show how it can impact, I think, and how it can help somebody gain tenure or get money or whatever.
Very cool. I guess I think that's all we got for our show notes. We've been at this almost an hour now, which. One of our champion shows, I guess. Some really awesome stuff. I mean, you're definitely doing a lot of good things over there on that West Coast. So I guess where can people reach out to you, Jeremy, and say thanks and hit you up on any questions that they might have?
Oh, probably Twitter, twitter.com/JeremyFelt, JeremyFelt.com, GitHub, BBV, wherever you want to.
Very good. Nice.
Yeah. Seriously, though, if you have any questions about, if you want to roll any development ideas or deployment ideas or or especially using WordPress for universities. And if you want to start talking about that, then anytime.
Cool. Very good. Thanks for coming on the show. Bronson, where can everyone find you now?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter still. I'm on twitter.com/BronsonQuick, or you can follow our company account at Human Made Limited, which you can probably see in my lower third. What about you, Jason? Where can people find you and reach out to you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Rez, that's 3 Z's, and you can hit me up on wpdevtable.com as well. We'll answer any questions there. So we want to just thank everybody for tuning in. If you want to know when our next show is, or get tips or any tricks from us, go to wpdevtable.com/subscribe and you get right on the newsletter right there. And if you like the show and what we're about, feel free to share and subscribe on iTunes or RSS or YouTube, whatever your flavor is, so to speak. And if you're a first-time viewer, then just be sure to catch up on our past shows and get your dev on. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks, Jason.